In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Thank you for joining me today on the iSpy Radio Show. It's good to be back after a week off to take my comprehensive exams. Brain has run through the ringer officially. It's one more step to getting my doctorate, the second and last step, actually. And I'm glad to have it over with. You know, Edmund Burke is credited with saying, "All that it takes for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing." Unfortunately, all it takes for society to one day wake up to its losing its culture and heritage is for its people to not pay attention. On today's show, we're taking a deeper look at the far left's influence on American culture, which, it's fair to say, the far left doesn't exactly like very much. They don't like traditional values. They especially don't like traditional American values or Judeo-Christian values or heritage, and they would rather push their own version on society. So we're talking with James Hershen of Headline Hollywood about two very different films, American Sniper, a pro-America film, and 50 Shades of Grey, one that is not exactly Ozzy and Harriet, and one that a number of psychologists have already come out and said denigrates women, which is odd, because I thought Hollywood was all about supporting women. I'm sure you've noticed the dichotomy of leftist thinking. They want permissiveness when it comes to sexuality and abortion, but then they want to crush you with the overwhelming weight of government, especially if you dare disagree with them. They want to shut you down. They want to call you racist, and how dare you think any differently than they do. Which kind of sounds like fundamentalist Islam. And that brings me to the second half of the show. We'll talk with Dr. Andrew Bostom about Islam and its encroaching right here in America, as well as their tie to the far left. And I'd like to welcome now James Hershen. He's a commentator and media analyst and the best-selling author of Tales from the Left Coast, True Stories of Hollywood Stars and Their Outrageous Politics. James, it's good to talk to you today.
Hey, good to be with you. How are you?
I'm doing very well, a little fuzzy-headed. I'm just coming off a week of doing my comprehensive exams for my doctorate degree, so my brain is sort of a little wrung out at the moment, but other than that, I'm doing okay. So we want to talk to you about a couple of things here, mainly 50 Shades of Grey and also American Sniper, and really just to kind of get your take on the leftist view there in Hollywood. And I'd like to actually start by asking you a question about your master's degree in media psychology. What's that about?
It's basically a graduate degree in psychology. It's just the emphasis is on the reaction of people to the media, and it's something, and actually it was, I was in a PhD program. I didn't finish a PhD program and ended up opting out with a master's. But it's, of course, a secular and non-political, and probably from a leftist point of view, because that's the way academics are.
Yes.
Program. But there is some actual legitimate research. One of the problems in psychology is so much of it is very much non-scientific. So much of the social sciences become an oxymoron. But if you're careful and cherry pick, you can actually find legitimate studies and see how, you know, the reaction of media. For me, I am a social conservative. I am a Christian person. And so I look at the media a little bit differently than the typical psychologist. And I look at what it does to people in terms of programming them and affecting them, and it's particularly affecting them without their conscious, knowledge. Huh. And so much of what comes out of entertainment has incredible propaganda value, and totalitarian dictators have known it.
Oh, sure.
And used it, which is why Hitler engaged a Academy Award-winning filmmaker, and why Joseph Stalin put a hit on John Wayne.
Yeah.
Because they knew the power of entertainment. And a lot of people, I think, you know, that somehow entertainment media is not as important as the so-called news media, which they're fusing these days.
Yeah.
But I think it's more important.
Yeah, well, you know, I was going to mention that about Hitler there. And he had a really interesting film. It was about the Titanic, and basically it blamed the rich people for the Titanic sinking. But anyway, that's a whole other discussion. We want to talk to you today about getting your insights and really tapping into that media psychology degree of yours and get your insights into the two most recently highly successful films, which are really on opposite ends of the spectrum. You got 50 Shades of Grey on one end and American Sniper on the other. And you just did a review of 50 Shades of Grey back in mid-February, in which you said, quote, "The film adaptation of the initial Grey book has just broken box office records. It has also severely chipped away at society's common conscience and established a deeply disturbing baseline for societal norms." And you go on to say that it really wasn't that long ago that participation in this kind of film project would have created a huge stigma for the involved actors, directors, and studios. So has something changed within Hollywood itself that suddenly makes this sort of film okay, and not just okay, but to really make it one of their preeminent movies?
This is a major watermark, a major change, not only in Hollywood, but in Western civilization. And it's not a change for good. It's a change for evil. I make my living, or have, as an entertainment lawyer. I work in Hollywood. I interface with executives. And I've done so for decades. I used to work at Paramount. I understand the mentality of that, of the town. And just 15 years ago, I think I can safely say, had any studio, any actor, any director been involved, any writer for adaptation purposes, with the content of 50 Shades of Grey, they would have been stigmatized. They would have been rejected. They would have been considered engaged in pornography, which is what 50 Shades of Grey is. It is not even softcore pornography. It masquerades as a romance novel. It masquerades, and it's been marketed as a love story with a very insidious appeal to young women. And it's just a tragedy that the same media, this very same media that we most recently heard attacking the NFL,
yes,
proselytizing this country about their attitudes towards women, their attitudes towards domestic violence, actually praising this book and this film as some kind of literature, as some sort of entertainment, when in fact what it is a blueprint for abuse, and there's already been copycats. So it is. I can't say it strongly enough. This is a total shame on the industry in terms of the entertainment industry, those involved, and they know it, and in their hearts they know it, and on our country and on Western civilization. Now that's pretty strong, and it's part of the problem is this kind of discussion appears to be it's not that serious at a time when we have people beheading people and burning them alive. We're really not worried about some silly romance novel. Well, I am worried about it because I see it compromising very seriously fundamental values that hold civilization together.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go ahead and take a break right there, because we want to talk about those fundamental values there of American society, and we'll do that talking about American Sniper coming up next. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. I'm your host, Mark Anderson, talking today about Hollywood. And to do all that, we're talking with James Hurston. He's a commentator and media analyst and the best-selling author of Tales from the Left Coast, True Stories of Hollywood Stars and Their Outrageous Politics. I'm sure that you've seen him on Bill O'Reilly's show, Fox and Friends, and a whole host of other radio shows and TV shows. In fact, he's as a frequent guest on the Jane Carroll show up in Portland on KUIK, one of our stations. So we want to talk now about, before we leave, actually, 50 Shades of Grey, I have to say that one of the best quotes about the movie, I thought, and the psychology behind it actually came from my Twitter feed. Someone said 50 Shades of Grey is only romantic because the guy is a billionaire. If he lived in a trailer park, it'd be a Criminal Minds episode.
I saw that. I thought it was brilliant. A lot of brilliant stuff comes out on Twitter. But you know what? On that subject, I mentioned that the people involved know it in their heart that this is wrong. and the two young stars playing the protagonists in this movie, Jamie Dornan, who portrays the male, and Dakota Johnson, they've voiced it. Jamie Dornan said his wife hadn't seen the movie. He doesn't expect her to see the movie, and he understands perfectly why she wouldn't. He said he had to apologize to his co-star for the scenes in the movie. And Dakota Johnson, who is the daughter of Melanie Griffith and Don Johnson, two stars of the past, Dakota Johnson told her mother she didn't want her to see the movie. And Melanie Griffith, for her, said, you know, I'm not going to see it. I don't think it would be appropriate for me to see it. Well, what kind of work is that?
Yeah, exactly right.
Not appropriate for your own mother to see it. And Johnson herself was asked, she was in Britain for a premiere, and they said, do you ever have doubts about taking the role? She said, absolutely, the entire time. Even now I have doubts. I think, what the expletive have I done? And that's my question.
Yeah.
What have you done?
Well, you know, and that's interesting because in business ethics, and I just, you know, did, as I said, I just finished my comprehensive exams on this, and so this is very heavily on my mind. But one of the tests of business ethics is, you know, that you're supposed to ask yourself is, how would I feel if I do this if the next day my parents found out about it? And I think that really speaks very highly of what is the psychology, really, of this movie, in the sense that she doesn't even want her mom to go see it. That's really shocking. So it's like, why then do it?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it's on top of it, there was a study that was done at Michigan State University by the chairman of and this was one of those social science studies I talked about, but it's called media content analysis, and there is legitimacy where they just analyze what is in media using statistical grades. In this case, they analyzed the story of 50 Shades of Grey using the standards that are promulgated by our own government at the Centers of Disease Control for abuse in domestic relations, and they just analyzed what the character does, where he's verbally abusive, where he stalks the young woman, where he controls her, where he has intimate relations against her will, where he sequesters her away from her family and friends. These are all elements listed by our government as signs of intimate partner violence.
Mm.
And then, of course, we can't discuss on your show the details.
Yeah.
He brings out the various accoutrements and tools that are used by people who engage in this sort of intimate relations, which involve harm and risk of harm and acting out violence. It is, I mean, if someone had told or had a news story predicting that we would have a international best-selling book with this content, that women from all over the world would read it, that it would become a box office hit, people would think that individual is crazy. And now we've reached that point. Mainstreaming hardcore deviant pornography into our entertainment world.
Yeah, it's really shocking, you know. And so on the one end of the spectrum, we've got 50 Shades of Grey, and then on the other side, we have American Sniper, which is pro-family, pro-military, no sex, and the hero actually not only fights evil, but actually even calls it evil. Does this really speak to a more divided American societal culture than ever before, or is this just the way that it's always been?
I don't really believe that it's a divided America. I think what it has to do with is that there are these insulated enclaves of elitists on both coasts. Primarily, we're talking about, you know, the area around New York City and the area around Los Angeles that live in a bubble. And they're not in touch with what they call flyover country. To that extent, it's divided. But the themes that are in American Sniper are universal themes that human beings have always resonated to. They're in the Greek tragedies. They're in Shakespearean plays. It's stories that are real about the real world that we live in, which is a moral universe where there is such a thing as right and wrong. And there are villains and heroes. And this, so the credit goes to Clint Eastwood, who picked up this project and Bradley Cooper, who championed it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't know that American Sniper, his best-selling book, of course, and Hollywood was interested. The original director was Steven Spielberg.
Yes.
And Steven Spielberg walked away from this project. The publicity was it was over budget, but I think there was creative issues there, too. Maybe he wanted to put some extraterrestrials in there. I don't know. And I joke when I say that. But Clint Eastwood is, a master of the medium. His body of work is not going to be appreciated until after he departs from this world. This is his best work, without a doubt. It deserved every nomination it got from the Academy, and it should have won more Oscars.
It did. Yeah, it should have, yes.
And a lot of people condemned it irrationally, claiming it was jingoistic, it was pro-war, when in fact, it is not pro-war. If anything, what it is it, just like Eastwood always is, a very clear-eyed, realistic look at the sacrifice, the real sacrifice, and what post-traumatic stress disorder means to a family, and what a hero like Chris Kyle, reluctantly going to tour after tour after tour, back into the danger zone at the front lines, for his country, for his friends, what that did to him personally and his family, it's real. It shows the horror of war, which and Clint is no, who I've met, is not a pro-war guy, but Clint has respect for the military, and that's, Hollywood doesn't understand that.
So
they became irrational and attacked this movie with, ignorantly, in most cases, without seeing it. You know, Jane Fonda loved the movie, by the way, who is not a right-winger by any stretch.
No, she sure isn't.
Because she saw it, she just came out saying, she compared it to some film that she had done. But anyone who sees it, who actually sees it objectively, would not say the idiotic things that Seth Rogen and Michael Moore and these others had said about it.
Yeah.
Because, in fact, it's brilliant cinema, and people that are in the film industry, that's why it got all the nominations, reluctantly so, but because Clint Eastwood's brilliant.
Yeah. And with Michael Moore and Seth Rogen, just because you're uninformed doesn't mean you don't have an opinion. But anyway, we'll have more on The American Sniper and the contrast with 50 Shades of Grey coming up after this with James Hurst. Stay with us. And welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. Talking today to James Herson, who is a commentator and media analyst. I'm sure that you've seen him on Bill O'Reilly's show and a bunch of other radio and TV shows as well. There's multiple ways that you can connect with him on Headline Hollywood, Herson on Hollywood, the Justice and Freedom Fund, and the Left Coast Report. And we'll make sure that all of those are linked up on iSpyRadio.com. And we've been talking about the dichotomy, really, between 50 Shades of Grey and American Sniper and the differences, really, between these two shows and these two films. And, we were talking during the break there about when you walk away from American Sniper, just the uplifting feeling that you have and the respect that you have for the military. And, I've got to say, I think that is one of the things that has made that so successful, is that people just they end up really understanding what the military is up against when they go into battle. It is one thing to hear about it on the news, but to actually be on the ground with them that way, I thought the film did an excellent job of that.
Yeah, and every once in a while we have, films that do that. I mean, we had the success of The Hurt Locker, for example, which kind of did that. But and this one gave, which of course, because it was factual, because it was real, us an understanding of what, a sniper does. And it showed just how ridiculous Michael Moore was when he called snipers cowards.
Yeah.
When in fact, there are snipers in every community in our country. They're part of the police force. There are snipers in the Secret Service who protect the president, that they're a part of, we hear about it almost on a regular basis, about how SWAT teams have sharpshooters who are able to defuse a hostage crisis. And it's a talent. It's a talent that Chris Kyle used, for the good of our country, to protect his fellow soldiers. And interestingly enough, Michael Moore has this animus against Clint Eastwood because so many years ago when Michael Moore had Fahrenheit 9/11, Clint Eastwood had Million Dollar Baby, and they kept showing up at these various awards segments. And what happened is at one time Clint Eastwood was accepting an award in New York, and he alluded to Michael Moore. Michael Moore put this on his Facebook page. He said, you know, if you ever show up at my front door with a camera, I'll kill you. And he did it with the Dirty Harry voice. It, of course, makes people burst into laughter.
Sure.
But Michael Moore started whining about it like he had really had a death threat from Clint Eastwood, which is absurd. And Clint Eastwood was talking about an ambush of Charlton Heston that had taken place by Michael Moore for his film Bowling for Columbine, which was shameful.
Yeah.
And Clint does this, by the way. I was at an event in California where they gave him a Commissioner of Parks honorary position. They gave him a badge. It was outdoors, and the press was there. And the first thing Clint did to go up to accept his badge, he goes up to the microphone, and he stares out squintingly, of course, at the crowd, and he goes, "You're all under arrest," he said, which made everybody crack up, which he knows that persona, and he uses it comedically on a regular basis. So he did that with Michael Moore. And that's what you have to do to a guy like Michael Moore anyway, because he may show up with a camera crew.
Yeah, really.
That way he never will.
Well, you know, I just didn't put a whole lot of stock in anything that Michael Moore said. I mean, this is the guy who literally is the broadside of a barn. And so it's kind of funny that he's criticizing snipers. But, you know, this is guy, this, he's just, he has really thrived on anti-American films, you know, and anti-traditional values, anti-conservative films. And so it's not a big surprise that, that he went there. We only got a couple minutes here with you, and I want to talk to you about Oprah. It was kind of interesting that, you know, here with the phenomenal success of a very pro-conservative, pro-family, pro-American, you know, just down the list, with the success of that film, here you've got Selma, which was basically snubbed by the Oscars every bit as much as American Sniper was. And it was announced that she's shutting down her Chicago operation and moving all to Hollywood. So is this her throwing down the gauntlet, so to speak, and saying, "I'm tired of being snubbed by my own crowd"? I mean, what do you make of her what do you make of this move?
I'm not sure if the move is related to her perception of being snubbed. You know, actually, I mean, can hardly say Selma was snubbed when it was nominated for Best Picture. And it won for Best Song, and it was, there were several standing ovations at the Oscars for the songs. But I think what it is that there's a member of the Academy that talked about this in the Hollywood Reporter. He said that people in Hollywood are suffering a little bit from racial fatigue. Because year after year, there are these projects that seem to use guilt as a way to try to get nominations. When they don't win, they say they're snubbed. The Butler was an example of it. I mean, just last year, winning film was 12 Years a Slave.
Yeah. Well, you know, you can only take being told so many times that you're awful. I mean, eventually, I can certainly agree that there's fatigue there.
And Selma was. I think Selma was a much better movie than the movie that won Best Picture, Birdman. I think, in that sense, I think the critics drive these voters, and they tend to like dark, dismal movies that you feel awful after you see them. And both Birdman and Boyhood, the critics' faves, were dark, dismal movies that you feel bad after you see it. So
And I think that's kind of revealing of their own inner psychology in a way. And unfortunately, we are up against the clock. James, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
All right.
And welcome back to the Dynasty Radio Show. The focus of today's show is all about the political left's continuing attacks on U.S. society. We just got done talking with James Herson about the left in Hollywood and the media and their continuing disdain for America and American values. We're going to shift gears just a little bit, but stay on that same road, so to speak. I'd like to welcome now Dr. Andrew Bostom, who is an internationally renowned author, speaker, and broadcast media guest. He has written numerous articles on Islam. His latest book is Iran's Final Solution for Israel, The Legacy of Jihad and Shiite Islamic Jew Hatred in Iran. Dr. Bostom, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start by talking about something that's fresh on people's mind, the Netanyahu speech.
Your newsletter mentioned that Prime Minister Netanyahu discussed two of Iran's three ideological pillars, jihad and Jew hatred. In fact, he said America's founding document promises life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, while Iran's founding document pledges death, tyranny, and the pursuit of jihad. But you also went on to say that the Prime Minister left out the third pillar of Iranian hatred doctrine, Najis. So talk to our audience about what that is.
Yes. I just wanted to clarify, though, first that what the Prime Minister was referring to in terms of concrete examples of the anti-Semitism was literally the Twitter account of Ayatollah Khamenei, the supreme Iranian guy, the theocrat, and where he was as recently as November tweeting out nine reasons for the annihilation of Israel.
That's just stunning.
And then in terms of the jihadism, as Netanyahu alluded to, is literally enshrined in the Iranian constitution. So if you refer to the constitution directly, you can see that they're invoking a Quranic verse, Quran 860, so the eighth surah, chapter, the 60th verse, which calls for striking terror into the hearts of the infidel, and the word jihad itself is used in the constitution in this article, indicating that the Iranian regime sees itself as a conquering force to Islamize eventually the entire globe. So that's right in the constitution. But you're right. The third thing that he did not get to, and what I would consider to be the perhaps the ugliest pillar amongst these three pillars, is the doctrine of the physical and spiritual uncleanliness, the najis of non-Muslims in general, Jews in particular. And again, we can go right to Ayatollah Khamenei's Twitter account to see that in a year earlier, so the annihilationist tweet about Israel was from November of 2014. The Najis tweet was the year before that, where he called Israel the unclean, sinister, rabid dog of the region. And the use of the words unclean and dog together have very specific Shiite connotations, because dogs are as unclean as pigs, according to things that are ruled to be unclean. And of course, the infidel, him or herself, and all their, not to be too gross about it, but bodily secretions are also inherently unclean. And it was used as a form of dehumanization towards the non-Muslims in Shiite Iranian society. And you have to remember that Shiite Iran was a theocracy not just since 1979, but from 1501 to 1925, then it had that hiatus, that period of autocratic rule, and at times very brutal autocratic rule, but Western-leaning and secularizing from 1925 to 1979, and then it returns to a full-throated theocracy. But the use of Najis doctrine was often associated with pogroms, with persecutions, directed primarily to Jews, but other minorities. And also, the non-Muslims were badged Nazi style. The only way for people to understand this. So yellow cloth patches were worn by the Jews. Blue cloth patches were worn by the Armenian Christians. And red cloth patches were worn by the pre-Islamic indigenous population, the Zoroastrians, and that was combined to these Najis regulations. So, after all, if you could identify these non-Muslim infidel unclean beings at a distance, you could avoid them. And one of the bizarrest regulations was that, again, Jews in particular, but really all the non-Muslims, were not supposed to go out in the rain or sleet because their impurity could wash off onto non-Muslims. And lest people think that this is a dead letter, after all, we did have reports of this through 1923, and then again, you do have this westernization and secularization. But once the theocracy is restored under Khomeini, as recently as 2013, Ayatollah Khamenei again issued a fatwa where he declared about the Baha'i. The Baha'i are a religious minority in Iran. The creed evolved in the mid-19th century as sort of an eclectic religion that combined Zoroastrianism, Islam, Judaism, Christianity, and even elements of Buddhism and Hinduism. But it's a very pacific religion. It has maybe 5 million followers worldwide. It happened to evolve in Iran. They've been brutally persecuted since the mid-19th century. So in 2013, just to show you that Najis is very much alive, Khamenei issues a fatwa that says any communication, friendship, or association with the Baha'i, a damned sect, must be avoided. Well, shortly after that, the Baha'i apparently are very active in the flower business. An Iranian Baha'i family flower business was shut down on the basis that because they handle the cuttings and everything and lots of water is involved, well, after all, if Muslim clientele happened into that store, they could be made unclean.
Yeah.
I mean, this is how dehumanizing it is.
Oh, it absolutely is. And I think that's where Islam and the far left, they're very kindred spirits. I mean, we saw that same kind of effect here in Oregon when you had a cake maker. They were basically shut down by the far left because they refused to make a cake for a gay wedding because it didn't fit with their beliefs. Unfortunately, we are up against the clock. Let's take a break right there. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Dr. Andrew Bossom talking about radical Islam. Welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. The topic for today is the left's continual undermining of American culture. We've been talking with Dr. Andrew Bostom, who has articles and commentary out there on radical Islam in the Washington Times, National Review, American Thinker, Front Page Magazine, and a bunch more. He's the author of the critically acclaimed book, The Legacy of Jihad, Islamic Holy War, and the Fate of Non-Muslims. That's you and me. Most of us anyway, and his most recent book is Iran's Final Solution for Israel. We've been talking militant Islam, and I got to go back to something that you said, this dehumanization by Islam and how they're really kindred spirits with the far left. I have to ask you, when you have talked to the people on the far left, when you point out the fact that it was really the tolerant Muslims, and of course the far left is supposed to be tolerant themselves, when you point out the similarities between Nazi Germany and Muslims and the badging, what's been their reaction?
Of the far left. I don't have much interaction. I mean, I was once on with this very nasty broadcaster, Tom Hartman, and he kept cutting me off. He wouldn't allow me to simply explain what the Sharia was, and I just hung up. So, I mean, but I don't know. I just assume they're in the usual state of denial that they tend to be in about these things. It doesn't fit their agenda. Islam is the third world religion that's supposed to be of the oppressed, and there you have it. And they don't want to see beyond that.
Yeah, unfortunately they don't. So regular iSpy listeners know about the concept of taqiyya, which is an Islamic belief that means that as a Muslim, it's perfectly okay to lie if doing so will further the cause of Islam. So here we have this nuclear deal with Iran that's on the table, and I'm sure that just because lying is part of Islamic doctrine, I'm sure that doesn't apply at all in this nuclear deal. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, actually, I think there was a very good example of taqiyya, which you're right. It is actually a Quranic doctrine that comes from the third surah, the 28th verse. It was elaborated particularly by Shiite jurists. You know, that after all, they were a minority sect within Islam, so they were persecuted by the majority Sunnis. But it's a broader concept. Actually, Muhammad himself, Islam's prophet, said that, specifically in terms of war doctrine, of jihad doctrine, that war is deceit. And so taqiyya plays a large role in warfare. And Ayatollah Khomeini said that, paraphrasing, but basically that, you know, if Muslims must drink wine in an effort to deceive, then that is perfectly acceptable. So it has a long, elaborate doctrinal history, but it was very clear in an interview, a pretty widely publicized interview that Iran's foreign minister Zarif gave last week with Ann Curry of NBC News, the day after Netanyahu's speech, and he said in terms of he lied not about what the IAEA assessment is, the International Atomic Energy Association is, but he also lied about the subject we were talking about earlier, about Iran's treatment of non-Muslim minorities. So I'll deal with that first. He says Iran has a bright record of tolerance to other religions. We are not talking about annihilation of Jews.
Sure.
We have a history of tolerance and cooperation and living together in coexistence with our own Jewish people. And then he also lied about what the IAEA is saying. As a matter of fact, the New York Times leaked a report from February 20th, which said that the IAEA was very concerned that they could not get a handle on potential clandestine sites, on military applications of the nuclear technology that Iran was working with, and basic lack of cooperation in terms of the historical record of experimentation with nuclear triggering devices and things like that. And 4 days later, so that was on the 20th, 4 days later, an Iranian resistance group, which, you know, has by and large a decent record. They're not always right, but they have a decent record in terms of unveiling previously unknown clandestine nuclear facilities. And they revealed information about another one just on February 24th.
Hmm.
So this is the Ann Curry interview last week was a classic example of this kind of tekiah.
Yeah, I have to kind of laugh there. A history of tolerance, you know. As long as you look past any of our actions, like badging or killing Jews, we're very tolerant people. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You know, just this. I think it was released yesterday, but it's a report that was based on testimony over the last few months. A British, it's called the All Party Parliamentary Group, and they were specifically examining the question of Christian persecution in Iran, and they came out with a 20-page report. Which talks about how the persecution of Christians, particularly converts to Christianity, but even recognized, the one main recognized Christian group in Iran is the Armenian Christians, that the persecution has actually gotten worse under this so-called moderate president Rouhani. It talks about arbitrary arrest and interrogation, severe physical and psychological torture when these poor Christians are detained, and even how the judiciary construes legitimate Christian activities like private homes for prayer meetings and being in contact with Christians outside of Iran. Those are deemed political activities that threaten Iran's national security. So of course that could wind up in imprisonment and torture.
Wow,
this is going on right now, and you know, there is a movement in Iran for conversion to Christianity, if it would be allowed and not brutally persecuted, because segments of the population are disturbed with trends,
and they should be. Unfortunately, under the current administration there, I don't see that necessarily being allowed. All right, let's take a break right there. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Dr. Andrew Bossom coming up in the next segment. We're talking about the Assembly of Muslim Jurists in America and what's their plans here. Welcome back to the iSpy Radio Show. Today it's all about the left undermining American society. We're talking with Dr. Andrew Bostom, who has written extensively on Islam and Islamic beliefs in leading publications, including his most recent book, Iran's Final Solution for Israel. If you missed any of this or our great conversation with James Hurston in the first half, as always, we'll put up a podcast on iSpyRadio.com by Monday at noon. So in this segment, I'd like to kind of start connecting some dots here. You know, we've watched Europe been taken over basically by Islamic influences, and there's certainly some parts of Europe that you just can't go. It's not complete yet, but it's deeply underway, and I think a lot of the European population is starting to wake up to this, that, oh my gosh, this has already happened. It's not happening. It's already happened. So let's talk about the infiltration going on here in the United States, which I believe is already underway and is actually being aided and abetted by people on the far left. You've got the Assembly of Muslim Jurists in America, and you've got a video out there that where We'll put that up on iSpy Radio as well so that people get a little bit more depth here. But what's their plan, basically, and how well organized are they?
Well, basically, it's a mainstream Muslim organization whose basic function is to train imams across North America, so U.S. and Canada, but primarily the U.S., and they have conventions every year for this purpose. But you can also just look at some of their literature in Arabic and even in English online. They have a fatwa center where they issue fatwas, and you feel as if you're propelled into the heart of the Islamic Middle East, because it's no holds barred Sharia vis-a-vis blasphemy, punishable by death, apostasy, punishable by death, waging jihad, well, even in the West, but only when the opportunity avails itself. There's a long document which talks about using, very legitimate means like going to law school, like being appointed to the bench eventually, to insinuate Sharia into the U.S. legal code. Honestly, from a pious Muslim perspective, from a mainstream Muslim perspective, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. I mean,
yeah.
This is what people have to get their minds around. I kind of get uncomfortable with the use of words like radical or Islamist. I think that, we're dealing with mainstream Islam.
Yeah.
Now there are minority sects that don't abide this, but those are really the outliers. The mainstream is the traditionalist,
yes.
The institutional Islam is very totalitarian. It has never separated the religious from the political.
Yeah, as evidenced by the fact that we never see these so-called moderate Islamists demonstrating in the street whenever there's a beheading. Yeah, you just never see that. It's you're absolutely right. This is the mainstream of Islam.
It's beyond that, because of course you can, you can using the doctrine of Taqiyya or just saying things for immediate expediency that that's not the real Islam. And the fact is that all these doctrines that I've been talking about are mainstream doctrines.
Yeah.
There's nothing heretical about them. It's the westernized Muslims, it's the secularists that are really the heretics. Now that's a tragedy, but that's the reality.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked earlier about the kindred spirits of the far left in Islam in supporting the takeover of American culture and law. Do you think that the progressives here in the U.S. don't see what's coming, or do you think that they see it but are willing to act as accomplices in the hopes that, they'll just eventually cross that Muslim bridge after they've first destroyed America? What are your thoughts on that?
I honestly don't know. I mean, I would say if you look at the at the linkage between communists and Muslims, that has a history, and it ends badly for either both of them. Iran is a good example. The communists and the traditionalists got together to replace the Pahlavi regime, which was again autocratic but both anti-communist and anti-theocratic. And then, of course, when Khomeini got the upper hand, he slaughtered the communists. On the other hand, in the Soviet Union, they had the upper hand by and large, and deported and slaughtered the Muslim population.
Yeah,
so,
it just seems that if your philosophy is based on hate, eventually you're going to run into trouble, even with your allies. Dr. Boss, I want to thank you so much for your time today. Unfortunately, we are up against the clock.
Oh, you're very welcome.
As I see it, the far left is the cultural equivalent of suicide bombers. I have to believe, based on what they say and what they do, that they're willing to blow up our society to replace it with another. They are willing to align themselves with people who have an equal or greater level of hatred for American values and our Judeo-Christian heritage and destroy that culture in the rather delusional hopes that they can wrest power away from their co-conspirators. The far left. Cultural suicide bombers. That's all our time for today. We would love to hear from you. Drop me a line, mark@ispyradio.com. Follow me on Twitter @ispyradioshow or find us on Facebook
And as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.